Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I don't often say this, but this next powerful, deeply thought-provoking story I think is a must for all of us to hear, we who thankfully live in the midst of such privilege, plenty and comfort. It's a story that goes back more than 100 years, and the extent and depth of it was only revealed when one man was bequeathed a collection of old documents after the death of his elderly grand aunt, a former missionary. As he delved into these documents, this story emerged of a truly remarkable woman, Sophie Newton, a schoolteacher, builder, preacher, evangelist, mentor, media personality, and advocate for women's rights in China. She spent more than three decades in that vast country from 1897, from the so-called Boxer Rebellion to the communist insurgency of the 1930s, a world away from our experiences today, indeed from the China of today. But there are many mighty lessons for us all, particularly to affirm the role of women in ministry and lessons of prayerfulness, wisdom, humility and love. Robert Banks, with his wife Linda, have written this important story of his grand aunt, Sophie, in the book just released, View from the Faraway Pagoda. And I'm so glad to say that they both join us now on Open House. Rob and Linda, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
It's great to see you, and it's a very important story. Can I start with you, Rob? Tell us how much you knew of your grand aunt as you were growing up, and how was it that you inherited these documents that were to become this her life story?
My family was not in a very strong proximity to her, so I actually only met her once about 18 months before she died. She was 90 at the time and was living in a retirement home in Sydney. And what struck me about her was she was very vivacious, very alert, very intelligent, very interested in me, what I was doing, what I was thinking about the future. Was I a Christian? Which fortunately I was. Although I was only with her for an hour and a half, she left a very deep impression upon me.
Linda, can you give us a snapshot of Sophie's early life and how China became so important to her and why?
Well, Sophie was born in 1867 in Cambridge in the UK while her father was over there doing, and father and mother were doing extra medical training. She came back to Australia and lived in a number of rural places like Mudgee and Queanbeyan, where her father was the local doctor. Her first job was as a young woman, as a governess on a property in Singleton in northern New South Wales. So she gained some experience with children that way. She moved to Sydney in 1890 when her father was working in Glebe, and there she started to attend the Anglican Church, St Barnabas Broadway, and she came under the influence of a number of people, one particularly being Robert Stewart, who spoke at a mission there. Robert Stewart was working with his family in Fuzhou in southeastern China, and he opened up to her, I guess, the whole world of world mission and of what single female missionaries could do. It took about 5 years for her to get there. And during that five-year gap, she had lots of experiences in parishes in Sydney. She was one of the first deaconesses in the Anglican Church. And she worked in mainly working-class parishes. She even planted a church in Burwood East.
Wow. So, Rob, how did you get the documents and how did you then go about researching, putting together
the story? It was all quite a surprise. After she died, they came into my keeping. I tried to find out why, and all that people knew was she knew I was a Christian. There weren't all that many in our family. And she knew I was interested in history, so she thought I might perhaps keep hold of them and do something with them. And the very first thing that sparked my attention was the back of a rice bubbles packet, which had a picture of a well-known Australian explorer on it. In fact, it was one of a series on Australian explorers, and this one was on Hamilton Hume. And she had written just a month or two before she died, "This is my granduncle, who is related to my forebears who lived at Stafford Farmhouse near Singleton." I went to the family and said, you know anything about this? Nobody had any knowledge of it at all. They thought that Sophie must have been losing her marbles. But when I checked it out through the family history investigation, I found she was entirely correct.
Wow.
So after that, as well as sifting through her somewhat fragmentary diaries, letters, a couple of little articles she wrote, I contacted people who knew her. There was some around at the time, or people who'd written on mission work in Southeast China. Then the two of us got to work on the extensive missionary archives from the Church Missionary Society in Australia and overseas. A lot of them were lodged in microfilm at the Australian National Library. And then finally we looked at any local or church history that might sort of discuss places she'd worked in and wider histories of China in the time that she was there.
So this is quite a research project, Linda.
Yes.
Took some years.
Yes.
I was able to trawl through some of the National Library's digital newspapers. It's a wonderful resource called Trove. Mm. And there we were able to find a lot of material about Sophie. In fact, there were 100 references to Sophie in the Sydney Morning Herald alone, let alone local newspapers, which absolutely astonished us.
Yes.
So we were able to piece together a lot of things that we had just good hunches about, really, but they were there. In fact, when she came home in 1931, there was an article written about her, about 1,000 words and a photo in a supplement of what became the Women's Weekly only 3 years later. So that's amazing, a missionary returning.
What a fine term.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
You.
It's wonderful.
Rob, can you give us a picture of the China of 100 years ago, the place, the culture, the society, where Sophie would spend the next three decades of her life?
It was very large even then, some 400 million people, made up of quite diverse people groups. It was very fragmented, with lots of belligerence on the part of different warlords in different parts of the country. It was ruled, however, by the imperial dynasty, the Qing dynasty, which had been in power for a couple of centuries, and they mostly kept the lid on some of the different unrest that was scattered around the country. Religiously, it was primarily Buddhist, but with strong Confucian elements and lots of local folk religion. And, of course, the big thing, the new thing, was the presence of Western powers, Britain amongst mm-hmm. them, over the 40 or 50 years from 1840 to 1890, which forced the Chinese to open up treaty ports, mainly so they could trade with them and, in particular, sell opium to them.
So she arrives at the time of this so-called Boxer Rebellion. For those unaware of it, can you briefly tell us about that particular chapter in China's history, particularly the hostility towards Christian faith then?
Yes, there'd been some precursors of it amongst Chinese who were wanting to maintain their traditions and their religion and not be overrun by Western influence or technology. So they wanted to hold to the ancient and well-tried ways. They were worried about people being converted to this new form of religion. They didn't like the intrusion of railways and trade into the countryside. And the biggest expression of it in 1899 was an army of some 300,000 strong, boxers as they were called, who were well armed and besieged the foreigners in the capital, Peking, hold them up for some 51 or 2 days, killed lots of Christian Chinese converts in the process who were also seeking refuge in the legations in Peking. And there were smaller uprisings elsewhere in the country, but it was only when an international force intervened that the siege in Peking was broken and the unrest in other parts of the country resolved itself.
Linda, it's important, I think, to set the context of what the Christian faith stood for in those days. It wasn't actually seeking to impose itself on the Chinese population.
No, I don't think so at all. I think missionaries saw their work as being holistically, seamlessly modelling the love of God through bringing education and healthcare to the Chinese. And indeed, as you read some of these people's diaries, you get a real sense of the love that they had for the Chinese people. And they had an active involvement, you know, working against practices which they saw as destroying lives, like opium addiction and infanticide. You can look back now and be critical of the fact that they were working in some kind of an imperialist structure, but they as individuals were very committed to the people.
Yes. On Open House, we're with Robert and Linda Banks, authors of this book, View from the Faraway Pagoda, about Rob's grand aunt, Sophie Newton. Linda, what was it that Sophie actually did in China, and how did she set about her work?
Well, as I said, in 1897, she went as one of the first Australian Church Missionary Society missionaries to go to Fuzhou, as in the Fujian province, as it's known today. There she joined two other amazing women who also had that pioneering backgrounds, one being Amy Oxley, who was the granddaughter on one side of John Oxley, the explorer and surveyor, and of Samuel Marsden, the Reverend Samuel Marsden, on the other side. So she was an amazing woman.
Yes.
And they set up literally a compound of a school, a hospital, and a church. They did itinerant evangelism. They trained up Chinese Bible women to visit the villages. I mean, Amy even set up a specialist blind school, which still exists to this day.
Wow.
They were the three little ladies in the midst of... No, there was no one there except them.
But tough and strong.
They were tough and strong. Yes. They had some hard experiences, but it was a wonderful experience for them. Actively helping women, you know, caught up in some of the tensions of foot binding, the arranged marriages of young girls, female infanticide, which was just a horrendous blight on their whole landscape. And, of course, women who had opium-addicted husbands.
Rob, it's clear, of course, that the work she was involved in often entailed considerable cost.
It was very demanding, and at times all three of the women were very fatigued, but they soldiered on because they had such great strength. Sophie in particular suffered from regular migraines, not connected, we think, mainly with the work she was doing. It was just something to do with her own physical condition. And these would, at worst, put her out of action for several weeks at a time, and even in hospital for a month or two in the capital, in Fuzhou. But apart from that personal issue, she was surrounded at times by social unrest, military skirmishes, warlords fighting each other, bandit activity in the region. Bandits were quite prevalent and just occasionally took missionaries hostage. On one or two occasions even executed them. Apart from all of that, natural disasters, annual floods, cyclones, periodic famine, and very destructive cholera as well.
In the midst of all that, Linda, one of the things you highlight is her quietness of spirit, sometimes in the midst of these big challenges. Clearly, again, a woman of great strength and resilience.
Yes, I think her diaries indicate that she had a real desire to be close to God, and she always talked everything over with him first, even on decisions which she felt were okay. She would often use the phrase, "But I must ask the Lord." And perhaps because she was single and often alone, she learned to lean on God for strength. And I think her country upbringing somehow kicked in as well. Her pioneering background was good training for facing potentially fearful situations. Her niece tells a story later on in her life when she was living in the Blue Mountains. She would have been in her 80s. She'd hear noises at night. She'd get a big walking stick out and go outside and try and confront this noise, you know. So she was obviously a woman she was brave and
yes.
And resilient, yes.
Elise also told us another lovely story. She was up country. She was accosted outside a village by a young warlord on his horse.
This is in China.
Yeah. And he said to her very severely, "What are you doing here?" And she said, I'm here to tell people about the love of God. And he said, what right do you have to do that? And she said, well, I have known him all my life, and I could even tell you about him if you would like. He snorted and said, why should I listen to you? You don't even wear pants like a real Chinese woman. And she hooked up a skirt, showed her pantaloons and said, oh, yes, I do.
Well, great stories. Can you tell us about her life and ministry when she left China after these decades there?
She was in her mid-60s and she took up deaconess work again in a church just outside Sydney in the Blue Mountains. But the home that she had there became a regular stopover for not just local church leaders. She was the friend of many, including the Archbishop of Sydney and his wife, but also church leaders that they brought along from overseas, particularly China, Japan, Korea, and so on. In her later years, as her strength suffered a bit, she discovered a special ministry of prayer for a wide range of people. And one of the great and wonderful discoveries for me was finding in her last prayer diary, recording who she prayed for and what she prayed for in the last few years of her life, my own name and the name of my brother, which often makes me wonder, of course, how much an impact that had upon what I did in my own life.
I'm sure that's true too. Linda, what would you say Sophie's legacy was and has been in China?
I think she modelled for women in the Fujian province that they could use their gifts of evangelising, teaching, preaching. Because she was recognised as the first deaconess in the Anglican Church in Fujian, this led to other women later on being set apart. I think she also helped to educate women and girls. She was part of that whole network, which became the first generation of professional women in China. Before the missionaries went in, women were not educated. Men were, but boys, but not women. So something of that is now impacting modern China. They're benefiting from professional women. And I guess this whole question of ultimately who knows about anyone's legacy, but I do expect that in heaven one day there will be many, especially women, who will rise up and call her blessed. Particularly
thing.
With Chinese faces.
Yes, what a wonderful thing. In researching your book, you're able to visit the places in China where she lived and worked. Tell us what you saw, what you heard, what you found.
I don't know how to answer that in a few seconds.
Yes,
but amazingly, we were able to find some significant places in her China story, a number of which are still partially standing because they're part of the Qing Qing dynasty. And the government is going to ultimately restore them. So we walked into this an amazing complex of what was Sophie's old house and her old church, and it was still there, dilapidated, but was there.
Mm-hmm.
We met some relatives of people she'd worked with and family members who knew of her work. We even met Chinese Christians who didn't know Sophie, but they said to us, thank you for sending your ancestors to our country to bring us the gospel. Yeah. It was so humbling. And we've built really good friendships with some Chinese people, and we are keen to go back. We hope to go back this year because we have a godchild in China that we'd love to spend more time with.
How wonderful. I think this is one of the most unheard stories of our current era, but one of the most significant, the vitality of the church in China. Rob, can you tell us something about that, what you saw on the ground there?
Oh, it is very vital, and we were so impressed by the people we met who were Christians. There are, of course, some very large churches now in the major cities, very large, larger than any in this country. But at the grassroots level and out in the countryside too, churches continue to multiply. I think one of the big and encouraging things is the church receiving more public notice and official government notice for the work it's doing in responding so quickly to help those who are in need, particularly when affected by natural disasters. The church is there straight away. It's there with people. It's there with gifts. It's there with workforce, etc., to do what's necessary. The other thing which really struck us was in some places, and certainly two connected with her, the local government is at its own expense restoring places that missionaries helped build, opening them up as historical sites that people can visit, but also have holidays in and around. This, to us, was quite a surprising discovery.
It's a whole new world based on your research of life in her time. Can I ask you both this one question to conclude? Why should people read Sophie's story, and what do you think they'll gain from it for life and ministry in such a different world? Linda?
Well, firstly, I guess I'd like to say that it's not just a book about women for women. It's a people book.
No. Yes.
And so, because it's a book about the opening up of China to the West again, which makes her story very relevant, it reminds us of how mission work can actually change cultures, can change people, which has in part helped to create modern China. So Christians have a stake there. We may not feel we do, but we do. And since Sophie lives for such a long time, it's a great book to give to people at the various stages of their life journey. You know, younger readers will be interested in how she began making decisions. Middle-aged readers will see some of the challenges that she faced as she struggled with her workload. And even seniors wondering about what kind of ministry contribution they could make at the end of their life will gain something from it.
Rob, what would you say?
I just add, Lee, I think Linda said it all, but apart from all that, it's a good read.
Yeah.
And it is too, yes.
Some very funny and exciting moments.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an important book for so many people to read in so many different ways. It's The View from the Faraway Pagoda, authored by Robert and Linda Banks. I'm so pleased that you've both come in to join us on Open House. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.